Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the weekly podcast by Radio Free Europe with Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. As China continues its crackdown against Muslim minorities, including its ethnic Kyrgyz and Kazakh citizens in Xinjiang, increasing number of people are rising up in Central Asia against what they say is a Chinese repression. The ethnic Kyrgyz or Kazakh who are originally from China but have obtained residence documents from Central Asian countries are leading the movement in Central Asia, but the campaign is expanding. Started in Kazakhstan, later expanded to Kyrgyzstan, and now people in Uzbekistan are gearing up, demanding justice for their fellow ethnic brothers and sisters in Xinjiang in the face of what they say is a Chinese persecution. Today in the Majlis, we are here to discuss Central Asian response to increasing Chinese move against its ethnic groups who have blood connections to Central Asia. Joining me in the discussion are Sean Roberts, Director of International Studies at George Washington University, who is a leading scholar in Uyghur studies, Torakul Durov, Director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Kazakh service, who closely follows developments in regards to ethnic Kazakhs, and Tinchbek Churtagin, a Kyrgyz historian, former Director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Kyrgyz service, is with us. Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi. Welcome on board, colleagues.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you. So, Tinchbek, you are in Prague today, but you are usually in Bishkek. So let's start with you. The latest developments in your country, Kyrgyzstan, things have been somewhat quiet so far on this particular subject, but at least the resentment was not public. But this week, people broke the silence. And we have already seen two public actions. So tell us, please, what was going on this week or the week before in regards to what the protesters say, persecution of ethnic Kyrgyz people in Xinjiang?
I attended one of the meetings in Bishkek, and I will say that the ethnic Kyrgyz in Xinjiang have been detained maybe after Uyghurs and Kazakhs. First, and that's why they started to organize such an action a little bit later on. This is one thing. Another thing is the Kyrgyz population is very small in Xinjiang. It's about 202,000 only. Mm-hmm. And they usually, you know, don't have any nationalistic ideas in Xinjiang because they don't dream about sovereignty. They just support the Kyrgyz Republic's independence. And that's why they were not against the Chinese regime there.
Yeah.
And but, you know, everything started maybe starting from the middle of this year. First, we had some rumors that there are some Kyrgyz also have been detained in Xinjiang and sent to the so-called educational camps.
Yeah.
But first, you know, public action started only in November.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say first bigger action was in Almaty, in Kazakhstan,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because more Kazakhs were detained.
Tinchbek, we will talk about the Kazakh a little bit later. Torakul is with us also. Still talking about Kyrgyz. So the Kyrgyz protesters formed some sort of committee to protect ethnic Kyrgyz in China, I believe. That's what I heard. And then I think yesterday or before yesterday, they staged a protest in front of UN office. Just talk about this activity a little bit.
Okay. Established committee to protect the Kyrgyz in China, they demanded from the Kyrgyz authorities, you know, to protect their ethnic brothers inside the neighboring country. And they met with the Kyrgyz ombudsman, Tokan Mamutov. He said that he needs to collect more information. The same answer was from the Foreign Office. They told to the members of the committee that they need to gather information. At the same time, they put it like that if it is connected with the Chinese citizens, even though they are ethnic Kyrgyz, then, you know, this is domestic matter of another country. Anyway, they need time to gather information, and after that, they maybe will challenge this situation. This is a calm situation for from the official side of Kyrgyzstan is understandable. But at the same time, the public is awakening in Kyrgyzstan. They are demanding, and they are also putting some information. For instance, they know about the prominent people who are believed to be detained. For instance, Professor Mambeturdu Mambetakun from Xinjiang, and Askar Junus also from Xinjang.
They are both ethnic Kyrgyz. Yeah.
They are ethnic Kyrgyz scholars who are organizing a lot of conferences between Kyrgyzstan and China and so on. But I don't think that they were, how to put it, so-called Islamists and eager to fight for independence of the ethnic group of Kyrgyz inside Xinjiang. They were supportive of the Chinese politics. Okay. That's why Kyrgyz scholars are demanding from the Kyrgyz authorities, to influence to the Chinese authorities as the member of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization to protect those prominent Kyrgyz from any false, reasons to detain.
We have Sean, and he's the expert on what's happening and why it's happening from Chinese perspective. We will get to that little bit later. But very briefly, Tinchbek, this is my understanding. At this stage, Kyrgyz government or the people or the protesters or the committee which was formed to protect the rights of ethnic Kyrgyz there, so they don't have any idea how many Kyrgyz citizens are affected by this crackdown.
They put like that, about 50,000 people might be detained, but
50,000 people Kyrgyz.
50,000 Kyrgyz, ethnic Kyrgyz, but I don't think this is true, because about 2,000 Kyrgyz are living in Xinjiang, and I don't think that one out of four people were detained there. In order to get the right picture, we need also correct information and not to put such a false information in order to fight for good reason. That's why I don't think that such people were detained. But still, if it's about 200,000 people, then even 100 intellectuals very important for the life of such an ethnic community.
Yeah, one person is too much, in fact. Yes. So, Turukul, earlier we have seen similar events taking place in Kazakhstan. Is it still going on, and how their campaigns are compared with what's going on in Kyrgyzstan?
Yes, now hearing Tinch, I just think what Kazakhstan saw this 1.5 years, how it started. It sounds like how it started in Almaty first. Yeah. First, we started hearing about problems of ethnic Kazakhs in China in April 2017, last year. And later it was raised, the question was raised during the Congress of World Kazakhs with participation of President Nazarbayev. And later we heard a lot of information from relatives of those who were arrested in China. Mm-hmm. And later we ourselves, Kazakh service, interviewed several people who were released from those political camps. And official Astana, Minister of Foreign Affairs, they started negotiations with Chinese side from November 2017. They said, we will negotiate. We have demand release of mainly Kazakh citizens, not ethnic Kazakhs who has, for example, Chinese citizenship, because it's, as Tinch said, with Kyrgyz example, it was the same with Kazakhstan, saying that it's a domestic issue of China and we cannot interfere. So we can demand for release of Kazakh nationals. Mm. But the problem is, well, many Kazakhs, ethnic Kazakhs, since the beginning of independence of Kazakhstan, they were moving to Kazakhstan, and some members of families, they might have Kazakh citizenship, but some other members might still live in China. And now what we see from examples of hundreds of people, that some of families are still suffering because their siblings or parents or children are being left in China. So what we understood from official Astana that they're still trying to negotiate with the Chinese side to release them. And about 2 weeks ago, Foreign Ministry of Kazakhstan said that 14 Kazakh citizens are still being kept in China. And they already released about 15 people. And what interesting things that they said in last 9 months, from January till September of 2018, some 2,500 ethnic Kazakhs had been able to abandon their Chinese citizenship in a simplified process, as it was agreed between Astana and Beijing. And these gatherings, public gatherings, are still continuing in Almaty, in Astana. They are organized at least three public organizations, what we know, Atajur Jastare, Jebu, and Eleman. They are now trying to collect different files from relatives of those arrested in China. They're trying to send it to Kazakh authorities, to Chinese authorities, to negotiate. So this is stories of Kazakhs now being told quite often.
Sean, earlier we were talking about some Uzbeks petitioning the president to act on behalf of what they say are hundreds or thousands of Uzbeks rounded up in those so-called re-education camps in Xinjiang, or somewhat got in trouble in different ways. So far, we heard about Kazakhs, lately about Kyrgyz, and now Uzbeks are talking about this. So please walk us through what you have been learning about the Uzbek front on this.
Well, to be frank, I haven't gotten confirmation of this. I've only seen on social media that people were saying that there was a group of Uzbek journalists and scholars who petitioned the president on behalf of the ethnic Uzbeks who would be in the camps. I think it's highly likely that there are ethnic Uzbeks in these camps as well. You know, the camps are essentially rounding up people arbitrarily, and they're focusing on essentially all of the Muslim minorities in the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region of China. And the conditions in the camp, quite extreme. They're really focused on changing the consciousness of people, stripping them of religion, language, essentially stripping them of identity. So, I mean, I see this as an evolving problem that's going to create more and more issues between China and Central Asia. You know, I think it'll be interesting to see if this suggestion that there's been action on the behalf of Uzbek intellectuals, which would make sense in the context of the present political situation in Uzbekistan. There's some opening up. There are various avenues for people to raise concerns directly with the president. And I think certainly in Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan, this is going to be a continued problem, particularly because I think throughout Central Asia, and particularly in Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan, we're starting to see we've seen for several years the sort of nationalist turn in politics. You know, I think that for a long time, Central Asians have had some empathy for what the Uyghurs were facing in China, but there was generally an attitude among the particular ethnic groups of the Central Asian nations that, well, that's not really our problem. But now, as it's focusing on their co-ethnic people in China, I think that that raises a lot of issues about populist politics in Central Asia going forward with regard to the relationship with China.
Yeah, thank you, Sean. Bruce, you know, we have discussed this topic a couple of weeks ago when the case of an ethnic Kazakh woman from Xinjiang was seen in Kazakh court, but voices are certainly getting louder and it's expanding in the region. So how you make sense of it, and what is kind of triggering point here? Also, when you look into these complaints, these frustrations coming out from Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan, very loud and clear, how they are compared, how the grievances are compared with each other?
Okay, well, I'll start with the last part of that. Yeah. I mean, I think they run parallel to each other. They compare very well. You know, again, as we've already heard, you know, the problem with the ethnic Kazakhs was the first to emerge, you know, and then it's only lately that we've been able to confirm that this has been happening with Kyrgyz in large numbers, and Kyrgyz who had actually gotten Kyrgyz citizenship and unfortunately went back to China and were rounded up with this. So, you know, but otherwise, this, it's more of a grassroots movement on the part of the citizens. They're the ones that are pushing this forward, and their governments, for reasons which are understandable, are reluctant to really take this up.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Chinese investment in both those countries, particularly in Kyrgyzstan, you know, where there's not a lot of foreign investment. This, it's important to have this Chinese investment, and they don't want to lose that, you know, and they certainly are probably not willing. The government would not like to risk that for Kyrgyz who are not actually citizens of Kyrgyzstan. We've seen the same on the part of Kazakhstan.
Yeah.
You know, however, at the same time, of course, we know that for the last few years, there's been a growing sense of caution with dealing with the Chinese on the parts of people across Central Asia, but certainly in Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan, where they do appreciate, obviously, the investment. They're worried about how much influence China has and the arrival of Chinese workers taking up positions in their countries. China's got a huge population, so it's understandable. You know, the fact that they were, as far as triggering the complaints, the fact that they were actually able to speak with people who held citizenship in their countries, who were rounded up and taken into these re-education camps and then got out and came back to explain what had happened to them, you know, that would be the spark that got people going. From the Chinese side, you know, we know that certainly what's been happening with them and the Uyghurs, I suppose, and Shah would know this too, and Tinch and Toroku also. This is the latest chapter in like a 2,000-year history.
Yeah.
It just so happens that the Chinese have the upper hand at the moment, very much so the upper hand at the moment. But I think what really made the difference was, you remember at the start of 2017, a small group of Uyghurs who had made it out of China and made it to the Middle East released a video. They were with one of the extremist groups, and they said that they were going to, you know, they were learning how to fight, and they were going to come back, and they were going to, the streets of China would be running red with the blood of Han. And Xi Jinping took that very seriously, and it was a major turning point for what happened, for the Chinese view of what's happening out there. Now, they used to always talk about the three evils, you know, separatism, extremism, terrorism, but that was independent of religion. All the time, the Chinese didn't want to equate what was happening with the Uyghurs with Islam at all. But after the start of 2017, they started more, at least their actions showed that they were more openly seeking Muslims. And there was no way they could deny that this wasn't a campaign against Muslims anymore. And then, of course, the big party Congress in October 2017, when they really started to articulate this new policy in Xinjiang.
Mm-hmm. Let me take a Tinch's point on this. I mean, Bruce nicely explained, this is what the Chinese authorities think about this, and this is how they are approaching it. But so what the protesters are saying is happening in Xinjiang, and why they think this is happening?
First of all, I will say that in China, local regime not only is oppressing the Muslims, but they are oppressing all those Tibetans and others, some people from Inner Mongolia, who seeks more autonomy, more rights, if not independence. That's why it's not about confession. It's about territorial integrity of China. And
this is Tinchlik, this is your opinion, right? Or it is what the people are saying?
You know, I put it from the information from China. We need to get a picture for the whole China, not only for Xinjiang. And this guy who is, ruling in Xinjiang, who came from Tibet, he had some experience of oppressing the ethnic Tibet people who are not Muslims at all. And in the case of Xinjiang, some of those who were detained, of course, they consider themselves as Muslims, but some of them, for instance, some professors whom you know better, they drink vodka. They are from Sunni Hanafi branch of Islam. They are very tolerant, and they didn't say anything against the Chinese territorial integrity. That's why we are very concerned about the political situation. It's, a remembrance of Hun Weibin period of Cultural Revolution in China. But the main thing is we have some scholars who live in eastern part of China. They enjoy freedom and liberal life there. Which this situation in Xinjiang is the second after Tibet, now. That's why we need to divide Chinese politics into regional aspects. This is the main context. Now, if they would say about Islam maybe 2 years ago, now they are just oppressing those Muslims who are very tolerant. That's why this is a start of political oppression of the ethnic minorities, I would say.
Can I add something here?
Sure.
With examples of Kazakhs, for example, probably we are talking about the combination of different reasons. As we heard from many Kazakhs who were released later from those re-education camps, they were telling that about questions they were asked at those camps, that why you are traveling to Kazakhstan so often, or the main thing, what kind of relations you have with Kazakhstan, or why you are sympathetic to Kazakhstan, you know, these kind of things. Maybe there were also a reason, not only religious, but other reasons why you are sympathetic to the other country or other culture. Otherwise, Kazakhs and Kyrgyz also, they were traveling a lot back and forth from Kazakhstan to China and back for their, you know, all different kind of weddings or other celebrations. It was like quite normal thing, but and people had very good relations with their families in Kazakhstan, in Kyrgyzstan, but only later, from 2017, something happened. Something started, and so, they still did not understand.
So, Torkel, I know Shani wants to say something, but Torkel, so just to follow up on that, so what people think has happened, and why all this is happening, why China is doing that? What is people's thinking on this, the ones who are protesting in the Almaty and Astana?
Hearing those people, it's quite difficult to understand what was a real reason, because, as I said, we are probably talking about the combination of different reasons, because some of them were saying that we were forced to eat pork, for example, in camps.
That looks kind of a move against, I believe, a religion, right?
Yes, and some others were asking about, like, sympathy to the country, Kazakhstan, like, why, and they were forced to learn Chinese songs and, you know, only speak in Chinese. Probably we are talking about different reasons. And what is interesting, among those Kazakhs who were arrested, they are not only men, or they are not only active people, I mean, in the active period of life, but there were some 78 years old women, or quite young teenagers. I mean, it's very interesting what might be behind these actions.
These are very important questions, Sean. So tell us real story behind what's happening and why it is happening in Xinjiang, particularly in regards to these ethnic communities with connection to Central Asia. So let's separate them from Uyghurs for a moment and talk about the suffering of ethnic Kazakh, Kyrgyz, or maybe Uzbeks.
Well, I think the key to it is you can't separate this all out. This is an unprecedented attack on all of the cultures, indigenous cultures in Xinjiang.
Is this it's an attack on religion, culture, minority? Religious. What's that?
I mean, there's Christians, there's atheists, there's followers of the Communist Party. The only thing that's not in these camps are Han Chinese. And, you know, what was said earlier about, certainly there's been a harder policy from the Chinese government in Tibet, Xinjiang, Inner Mongolia. But this is the first time we've ever seen. This is much worse than anything that's ever occurred in Tibet or Inner Mongolia. This seems to be essentially an attempt at ethnic cleansing. And I think it's a new kind of ethnic cleansing, because the assumption is that they can actually cleanse the members of the ethnic group by ridding them of all of their identity and making them into Han Chinese. And I think if that doesn't work, you know, then it might escalate to other forms of ethnic cleansing, just getting people out of that territory. I think that for one thing, it's difficult to know why this is happening right now. There's a lot of different reasons, and among my colleagues, we have differing opinions. I think that one of the things that's happening is with the Belt and Road Initiative, there's a strong desire to create a major commercial hub in Xinjiang that is stable, that looks like it's what China wants to face the rest of the world. It wants to be more like the southern special economic zones from the 1990s. And to do that, I think that the government sees that it just has to rid itself of the local character of the region. And I think this is going to be a serious humanitarian crisis that we're only at the tip of the iceberg in terms of Central Asia's reaction to this, because it's bordering on Central Asia. It may be in part fueled by the Belt and Road, which is going to encompass Central Asia. And I can't see that the Central Asian states are going to be able to skate a middle road on this situation. Because one problem is with, you know, estimates of 800,000 to 2 million people in these camps, what does the Chinese government do in terms of letting people out? Obviously, these people are going to be extremely angry when they get out.
Sean, we will definitely talk about the, what are the options Central Asia and authorities have on that. But again, just to a little bit press on, I mean, you said what's happening there is an ethnic cleansing, and it has to do with the turning Xinjiang into a hub for China's Belt and Road Initiative. What's the connection? And also, if it is ethnic cleansing, Sean, the second question, you know, I hear about Uyghurs being cracked down, Kazakhs and Kyrgyz are in the headlines, but we don't hear anything about Tajiks. Tajiks also a part of minority there, I believe, in the Tashkurgan region somewhere. So is it an ethnic cleansing, really?
I think it is an ethnic cleansing, but it includes all of the minorities in the region. And I think that we will probably start to hear things about Tajiks. It's important to point out that the Tajiks in Tashkurgan are more likely related to Tajiks in Badakhshan, Nagorno-Badakhshan, because they're essentially Badakhshani.
They're
the same Tajiks that you have in Nagorno-Badakhshan, of course, which has been, you know, that area, not a lot of information comes out of there. And the only information we hear is there's already some issues between the Tajik government and the people in Nagorno-Badakhshan. But I think that we will start to hear about that. You know, we only recently started to hear about Kyrgyz, and we might be hearing about Uzbeks, but we're finding that all the people are being rounded up arbitrarily. It is focusing in part on Islam, but it's also focusing on loyalty to the Communist Party. Mm-hmm. So there's at least three or four things that land you into one of these camps. Mm-hmm. One is being suspected of being overly religious. One is being suspected of being a two-faced official. In other words, a Communist Party member who doesn't really express total loyalty to the Communist Party. Another is having any relations abroad. And another one is having found on any of your electronic devices anything that reflects Islam or kind of ethnic nationalism.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, Sean. We are really running out of time. So either fact or fiction, this is what people think is happening, and they are already in the streets in Central Asia voicing their frustration. So most pressing question is how authorities are responding to this demand and how satisfactory the responses are for the people. Also, how big of an issue has this become in the region, and how far can it get, and whether this will factor in this the other way in Central Asian Chinese relations going forward. Let's continue the debate talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis podcast, I'm joined by Sean Roberts, Director of International Development Studies at George Washington University, Torkul Durov, Director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Kazakh Service, Tinchbek Chortagin, a Kyrgyz historian, former Director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Kyrgyz Service, Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia Blog, Kishlak Owaziyai, Mohamed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Media Manager in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing increasing outcry in Central Asia against persecution of their countrymen and women in Xinjiang by Chinese authorities. Now, these protests have been taking place for some time in Kazakhstan. How much of a factor, Torkul, this has become in the national politics there in Kazakhstan? Who are the people talking about this?
Well, these problems of Kazakhs first, as I said, raised last year in June during the World Congress of Kazakhs with participation of President Nazarbayev. Hmm. Even though afterwards, not many media companies or newspapers or websites wrote about any problems of Kazakhs in China. But we have been trying to find exclusive stories of Kazakhs, what happened to them. And they were later telling our reporters, reaching us through their relatives in Kazakhstan and telling their stories. And later it became quite a big topic for many journalistic organizations. And today in Kazakhstan, you can read quite often about what is happening, but mainly problems of Kazakhs, ethnic Kazakhs in China are being discussed, I would say, in social media, in Facebook. As we are discussing about it today, one of good news that I can share now, today, two mothers separated from their kids in China. Now, today they met, they reunited in Pavlodar, and it happened after our report, one of reports last month, mm-hmm. When we showed those mothers crying and asking for help. And today they were reunited. This is probably also, we can talk about the impact of how this journalistic work is bringing to the life of ordinary people. Mm-hmm. But now, overall, I would say this topic of problems of ethnic Kazakhs are still being not number one or on a very high level mm-hmm. of discussion.
Okay.
It doesn't create big discussion.
Yeah, how about Kyrgyzstan, Tinchbek? We know the political situation there is way vibrant than any other Central Asian country. So has this become a national topic there? And is there any chance of becoming a national topic? Imagine in the next election, for example, do you see this becoming topic for the election debate?
I will say the Kyrgyz civic society is very small in Central Asia, but very powerful, I would say. Mm-hmm. Even in Bishkek, I attended some wedding parties. Mm. People were talking about the Chinese ethnic Kyrgyz, their fate. It means that all the mass media and the kind of Twitter, Facebook, and others, they are reaching out to different parts of the region, and they will put it all the time as the main question to their politicians, for sure. And at the same time, I will say that in order to, get the right picture, as my colleagues put it, Sean also said about the ethnic politics. It's bigger than the religious issues. That's why we need to put in a right way. This is an ethnic policy towards the Xinjiang minorities and minorities in Tibet and in Mongolia. Mm-hmm. And in Kyrgyzstan, I will say the civic society will demand more and more from their authorities, to not to neglect this issue.
Yeah.
By the way, I had been to Tashkorgan in Chinese part of Pamir, and the Tajiks there, they are mostly Ismaili Tajiks. They are not Sunni Tajiks. That's why they are, divided from the Sunni Tajiks inside Tajikistan. And they very friendly to the Chinese Kyrgyz. And they had more inter-ethnic families and so on.
Yeah.
But I will not say that the Tashkorgan Tajiks would demand from Dushanbe about their fates. They are very small. Maybe we don't have facts because we don't have any reaching to their situation.
Yeah, I mentioned them just, if this is all about ethnic cleansing, why we don't hear anything about Tajiks. So that was the context I mentioned. Bruce, just to move on the discussion very quickly. Now, this is what's happening in Kyrgyzstan, in Central Asia. So how much of a challenge has this already become so far for the authorities there? They are in this delicate situation, as you said, on one hand trying to not upset China, on the other hand some sort of response is needed to calm down the people. So explain us this delicacy that they are in and how they are responding to it.
So certainly it's a bad situation for them, because, you know, they know what the national sentiment is and what it could become from this. We've seen a small, not such a small example in Kazakhstan just a couple of years ago when they had land privatization and the rumors spread that Chinese would come in and buy up a bunch of land in Kazakhstan, and it sparked the biggest protest they'd had in like 20 years. And of course, you know, also stoked up anti-Chinese sentiment in the region. So they know this is a loaded issue for them. So it's tough. You know, I mean, China is a huge investor. It's the biggest investor in a lot of these places and countries in Central Asia. So, yes, they want that. Of course, they are aware that the people are extremely wary of what China could do in Central Asia. If they don't say anything at all or are seen to be not very forceful in interacting, you know, engaging the Chinese authorities and trying to do something about that, to the people, I think it's going to look like they're just bowing to the Chinese for money purposes. And this is going to be a problem. You know, even in an entrenched regime like Kazakhstan, if you get the majority of people start to believe that you won't confront China because you're more interested in the money that they're giving you, or that China's just too powerful and you don't see any how you could possibly do anything at all about it, I think it's going to, you know, engender a lot of resentment against the government, you know, from the people, where they'll say you're basically being bought off, you know, so that you keep quiet about what's happening to our you know, cousins and in some cases, brothers, sisters, children, whatever, on the other side of the border. So it's it's a, you know, it's a powder keg, potentially.
So, Torakul, I heard you were adding something to Bruce's thoughts. So do you think this frustration turning into a factor in this the other way in shaping or affecting China-Central Asia relations?
Yes, I agree with Bruce. It's a very delicate situation for authorities, especially now. But they cannot, of course, ignore the public anger or overall mood, what is happening now in the society. We saw it during the court, a very big court of Sayragul South by a Kazakh woman, ethnic Kazakh woman, who formerly worked in those political camps, instructed teachers, and later was tried in Kazakhstan for illegal border crossing, but later released because of probably this big public anger. And mood was very high, and Kazakh authorities, even though she was telling that she did not write things, right? Crossing the border illegally. But she said, yeah, still, thank you. This is Kazakhstan. I love. But, you know, overall, what we saw that authorities could not ignore the overall mood of people. And but what is sad thing is she still did not get the status of a refugee. That's another question. But now I think for authorities in Central Asia, there are very small room for maneuver. What to do with this situation, how to, you know, deal with problems of ethnic brothers in China. A couple of weeks ago, we saw Minister of Foreign Affairs of Kazakhstan met with ambassador, Chinese ambassador in Kazakhstan. They were discussing, telling, and probably, of course, they discussed this situation in Xinjiang, I believe.
So, yeah, China is taking on all those ethnic groups, either on religious or some other reasons, and people in Central Asia are kind of increasingly rising up against this, and authorities in Central Asia are confused how to react to this. So in this situation, which direction is this situation is evolving, Sean, going forward?
Well, I mean, one thing that strikes me is that, you know, Bruce mentioned that it's a powder keg, and I think that's true, which means that it could play a role in variety of political machinations in Central Asia. I mean, one is the succession question in Kazakhstan. Nazarbayev has, throughout his career, his greatest fear has always been opposition from nationalists. He's always clamped down on opposition newspapers that are written in the Kazakh language. You know, he's very sensitive about the 1986 clampdown on the student protest in Almaty, and his potential relationship to that, being in the Communist Party elite at the time. And, you know, there's a real possibility in a succession process that somebody can use the nationalist card. And I think the same thing, I mean, we've seen it already in Kyrgyzstan. Since Kyrgyzstan has started to have more or less free and fair elections, nationalism has constantly been a card that's been played. It was played, you know, after the Osh conflict between Uzbeks and Kyrgyz. We saw these nationalist politicians rise up and be able to use that. So I think that, you know, it's difficult to say where it's going to go. There's no doubt the present regimes, none of them want to deal with this. They're all thinking about their future development, which is understandable. But as everybody mentioned, I think that the popular interest in this issue is going to make it a part of political machinations going forward.
So we really have to end the discussion here. So, but what you will be looking at going forward in this developing story, please, let's start this with you, Bruce. Please limit your thoughts in one point only. So what you will be looking at going forward in this saga?
How long and how deep this campaign in China keeps going, and I think that will determine the, you know, what kind of response the Central Asian governments are able to give. If it continues like it does, they're going to have to be more vocal sooner or later if they want to keep support within their own countries.
Okay. Tinchbek, your points. So what you will be looking at?
See. Thank you, Mohammed. I would say that public diplomacy will help and support and enhance the official diplomacy in this case.
Okay, Turukul.
It would be interesting to see how governments of Central Asian countries will continue the discussions with China's side, because we already saw some international organizations, some European countries, U.S., Congress people, they were trying to push official Beijing to close those political camps, but we haven't heard nothing from governments of Central Asia. It will be interesting to see how they will try to change their policy, or they will continue the same thing what they have been doing.
Sean, your points, just one point about this. What's that you will be looking at going forward?
Well, I think the last point about the geopolitical dimensions with how the West is already aggressively responding to this. But then the thing that really interests me is whether Russia may use this issue as well in terms of kind of creating a wedge in Chinese influence in the region. Because if they start using media to cover this, certainly Central Asians are going to get that message through the Russian media.
Well said. Thank you, Sean Roberts, Director of International Development Studies at George Washington University. Also, big thanks goes to Torakul Dorov, Director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Kazakh Service, Tinchbek Chortagin, Kyrgyz historian, and Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. Colleagues, thank you very much for your time and thoughts today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.